Mr. Tiffin, Reel 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Tiffin?
22nd of November, 1921. I was born in hospital in Newcastle. But we were resident in Sunderland.
Whereabouts in Sunderland?
Chester Road.
And what did your father do for a living?
He was a dental surgeon.
And how many were there in the family?
Well, he hesitated as if I didn't know. My father married three times, in fact, which was just to why his having died. So there were four half-sisters, half-brothers and sisters. And my own family, that is my mother's family, there were three of us.
And that was the last marriage, was it?
That's right.
And what do you remember of your upbringing? Was it a comfortable upbringing?
Well, until my father died, yes, I suppose it was a reasonably comfortable upbringing. He was a dentist, yes.
Did you have any servants, for instance?
Well, we did. We had a, if you could give them such a grand name, we had a maid. And we actually, because it was quite a large family, the three youngest of us, we had a nursemaid, really, but I suppose looking back, she was just a young girl who looked after us. I couldn't really say there were servants in the grand sense.
Was the whole of the extended family in the same house?
Yes, that's right. One of my brothers went to sea later on, so he wasn't there. Yes. At that time, I was very young then. My father died when I was seven.
Now, what about your first school?
My first school was a local council school, Barnes School in Sunderland.
And you just got a normal 3 hours education there, did you?
Yes.
And what was your next school?
Well, my next school was the Royal Masonic School in Bushing. My father, he died quite young, he was only 49, and I was only 7. And being a Freemason, the Freemasons, as you may know, ran this school at this time, a very excellent school, in a public school land. There was a junior school to which I went at the age of 10. Now, at this time, my mother was a widow, and our family and financial circumstances were very, very different than it had been. Very different indeed. So I went away to school, to a Masonic school at 10 years of age. The junior school, you left at 13, a prep school, you call it really, but you call it a prep school, and then went to the senior school, which is in Bushing.
Was the junior school was there as well?
The junior school was there as well.
Now, what was the sort of regime like at the school? Could you give us an idea of what life was like at the
I would say it was typical of a public school at the time. It was what would be considered today an extremely hard life. Although I'm bound to say that at that time I didn't consider it so, because you really never know anything else. You slept in dormitories, of course. The food, by standards, was plain, considered to be wholesome. It would probably make people today throw their hands in horror, consisting of a good deal of stodge, etc. We all thrived on it. The discipline was firm, not harsh, although some of my contemporaries in later life considered it to be harsh. I didn't. Strangely enough, for a public school, caning was restricted to the headmaster. Only he was allowed to cane. There was really no need to use the cane, because you were boarders there, and there was plenty of punishments you could mete out. Even the reduction of the smallest privilege, such as have some privilege on Sunday, I can't forget what it was, but if that was stopped, that was a dreadful thing. Lines were dished out lavishly, the prefects had a great deal of power. Bullying, well, there was always people trying to bully, but looking back on our school, it was fairly effectively controlled, mainly through the prefects. Well, prefects were rather like the NCOs in the army there.
There was no bullying by the prefect, so that's not...
Oh, well, the odd one may have done, but by and large, the ethos of the school was that bullying was looked down on. There were bullies, but they were dealt with.
How many boys were out there at the senior school? Was it
400.
So it was quite a large school for those days. Was it? Was there a lot of sport? Was sport important at the school?
Yes. Sport was important. We played rugby and hockey, which I always thought was a pity because I was good at rugby and not good at hockey. We played rugby during what was called the Lickles term, after Christmas, and then hockey afterwards. Cricket, of course, good cricket team. Swimming was encouraged. Water polo. We had a good athletics track, which incidentally we built largely ourselves. That was another point in the school, I suppose, it was the headmaster. He considered that boys should know what hard work was. And we used to go out with buckets of space, and we dug this thing under the supervision of about five workmen. And we had what you call them, bogies. It was real hard work, and it took us about 5 or 10 years, but we dug a track out. So that was another indication. The school was run on hard practical lines as well.
Were you good at sport?
I was, personally, yes. Particular sport. I was a very good runner. You know, that sounds dreadful, that sounds close to, but I was a very good runner. I was the school junior and intermediate Victor Madorum. I still got the cups. Because I could run very fast and fleet of foot, although never big, stocky and reasonably strong. I was in the school at 15, even though I was only 16. That was a big help. If you were good at sport, you had a different aspect. People, you were always considered to be amongst the elite, even if you weren't in the sixth.
What about academically?
The school was run on practical lines, at about the age of 14 or so, they divided you into what we roughly would call commercial what did they call the other side? I forget. But the other side went on, if they were lucky, to university and took A levels, whereas the people on the commercial side took the commercial examinations, Royal Society of Arts, and London Chamber of Commerce, etc. And you left at 16.
Which side were you on?
Well, I was on the commercial side. So I always used to think of myself till I was about 16 as not being quite as brilliant as these other people.
Did you get more prestige from being good at sport than academically good?
Of course. But my academic record, looking back, wasn't bad. And when I got out into the commercial world, I considered I was more than adequate.
What about the OTC? Was there an officer's training corps?
Oh, yes. It was a very strong feature of the school, indeed.
What proportion joined it, would you say?
I'm not sure, but I've got a lingering feeling that it was compulsory. Yes, I think it was compulsory.
And what training did you do with the OTC?
I suppose it was quite good. I mean, basic training, the ordinary drill, it was Form 4s in those days. Basic training, you had rifle shooting with a small bore inside, I think. We were equipped with and drilled with what I think were Boer War Lee-Enfields.
Would that be the long one?
The long Lee-Enfield. We also had, and it's rather interesting, for shooting practice as well, we also had the martini. Well, that's interesting. The one with the latch underneath, they used to pull it down, chuck the bullet in, at our Zulu.
Did you actually fire them?
Yes, we did. Yeah. They took the 3 or 3 bullet, I think.
So you actually had proper butts and fire range?
Yes, indeed.
Were you a good shot? Why not, do you think?
I don't know. I never gave it a thought. I was, as I said to you, I knew I was a good runner. I was reasonably strong. I was quite a good boxer or fighter, if you like. But I wasn't a good shot. Coordination, I suppose. I wasn't a very good cricketer, you see. Even though you say, was I good at sport? Yes, I was good at sports that entailed speed of foot and a certain amount of brute strength. Cricket, I was not very good at, nor hockey.
What about... It was an officer's training course, so to speak, and a lot of that training so far is what the other ranks would get, just basic training.
Absolutely.
Did you get onto tactics or did you have sand tables or lectures, that sort of side of things?
I didn't personally. This became the preserve of the senior boys, the most senior of which were given the rank of what was then called under officer. And the next senior boy was the equivalent of the company sergeant major. The regimental sergeant major was a member of the staff, not the teaching staff. He was an ex-soldier, I think he was something to do with the administration. But he was the RSM, an ex-regular soldier.
So you didn't do... Did you go out for tactical exercise at all?
Yes.
What sort of tactics were they teaching you?
Well, that's difficult to say, because quite honestly, how old would I be? 16, the last one I was on, which were manoeuvres we used to call. We used to go to Berkhamsted.
That was camp then? You did them while you were at camp?
No, we used to... yes and no, we did them both. I remember we used to go to Berkhamsted from the school once a year, and then we went to camp at different places.
Well, take Berkhamsted first. What would you do there?
I'd only be 16, as far as we were concerned, it was a bit of a lark. But I presume it was no different from what we did later on. Platoon exercises at platoon level or company level, the usual things, a mock exercise, take some point or something, I presume. It was umpires used to go around and say you were dead and all this sort of thing. But it was a bit of a lark, and we enjoyed it because it was an opportunity to get a bit more freedom than you normally got.
Was it realistic at all?
Oh, not by modern standards, no.
Now, what about the summer, well, the camps? Were they...
Yes. These were interesting because they were almost entirely like the sort of camps we found ourselves in at the beginning of the war. We were under canvas and canvas latrines, hideous washing up arrangements, which you took in your stride. We did the same sort of tactical exercises, drilling, you were inspected by somebody.
Would you, when you took part in tactical exercise, were you just playing the part of another rank?
Oh, yes.
Or would you ever be given command of the platoon in one of these things?
I never was, no.
So it was just very much a lower rank training at that, although it was officers' training corps.
Oh, yes. You could aspire to be. Again, the way the school was structured, if you left at 16, I mean, I suppose the philosophy was if you're going to leave at 16, it's only people over 16 who are going to go on to higher things that became NCOs.
What about the Cert A? If you were leaving at 16, you wouldn't do the Cert A.
No.
Were you aware of the Cert A at the time?
Oh, yes.
Did you train towards it at all yourself?
Well, I suppose the training was all directed that way, but I think it was always thought that those boys who were in the commercial side of the school would be leaving at 16 and probably wasn't worth taking. But I'm bound to say this, that I found later on when I joined the territorial, there was a jolly good basic knowledge of ordinary drill and the use of weapons. I mean, for example, I was quite used to handling a rifle, although I was only...
Had you done, I should have asked earlier, did you do any other weapons other than the rifle? I mean, bayonet, hand grenade, that sort of thing?
Oh, yes, we used to do, not hand grenade, I can't remember that, but we used to do some bayonet training. But they were, I suppose, pretty wary of that. I never saw anybody plunging a naked bayonet in the sandbag. We used to have to keep the scabbards on them and things like that.
Were you made familiar with the Vickers or the Lewis at all?
Not the Vickers, but I can't... There again, it's a long time ago, because the Lewis gun was one of the first things we were made familiar with.
We'll leave that then, yeah. So, were you attached to a regiment? I mean, sometimes...
Yes, the London Rifle Brigade.
That's a territorial battalion of the London Regiment. Now, you came to leave at 16, and that'd be about 1937.
Well, 1937, I left, that's right.
And you were destined for the commercial world. Had you thought of going towards dentistry at all?
No, not really. Again, if I'd gone the other way, if I'd gone into the stayed on when I was 18, obviously some of the older boys who went to university, they went into medicine. So, no, and I never really wanted to be a dentist anyway.
So how did you go about getting your first position or job?
Yeah. Well, you have to realise this was 1938, January 1938, and unemployment was 2 years. So, in those days, the whole idea was to get a job, a clerical job of some sort, which was a plum job in those days, because what compared to other people in the workforce, you had a holiday, you had fixed hours, and it was considered to be, if you managed to get yourself a job in the town hall, a reasonable one, it was a feather in your cap. And I got a job as what they euphemistically called a junior clerk, which I suppose, to be blunt, was just an office boy, I suppose. Grace was the title of junior clerk.
And who with?
With the firm that I am still connected with now.
What's that one?
It was, at that time, it was a marine insurance company based in London.
And were your father's Masonic contacts any help to you in getting...
I think so. I mean, subsequently came... know that. I had to go to the Labour Exchange like everybody else, to register for the Labour Exchange.
So you weren't aware of the network perhaps helping out a little?
No, I wasn't at that time.
Were you a member of the Masons?
No, I never have been a Freemason, although I must say, and I must emphasise it, I have the highest regard for them as a charitable organisation, and the highest regard for the school to which I went, very proud of being in the school. Still attended, same as I do in my regiment. No, I'm not finished, simply because I suppose apathy didn't know too much about it, perhaps wouldn't get the interest, but I'm always eternally grateful.
So you started early 38 at this marine insurance company. What were a rough outline of your duties then?
Well, you addressed envelopes, you sorted, you did filing. I did type.
When did you learn that? That
was. I didn't bookkeeper. I had a sound. I had my Royal Society of Arts, London Chamber of Commerce examinations in bookkeeping and typing. The sound knowledge of the use of English, which people don't think, etc. So I was well qualified for the job, but I think, in fact, in those days, it was probably 20 young applicants for every job. I mean, to get a job in an office was quite a difficult thing to do in 1938. And I think only subsequently, I put two and two together, the chairman of the company was a Freemason and had been, knew my father, I think. My father's position as a dentist, and apart from him being a Freemason, he was quite well known. So he had friends
So it may have been just normal influence or good thinking.
Yeah.
Now, you carried on as a junior clerk until the war broke out, I presume.
That's right.
Now, during that period, 38 was the time of the Munich crisis, were you, and even before that, were you aware of any menace from Germany or anywhere else? Did you follow foreign affairs?
Very much so. Although only 16, Yes, my friends or people of similar education. Yes, we followed it very closely. Don't say with any great understanding.
Did you see yourself, Hitler's Germany, as a threat? Or?
Oh, yes. That's a possibility in my mind, yes. Now, that's only myself, I'm not sure that people ever gave it a thought, but certainly our friends and I, we considered that war was inevitable.
Did you think it would involve you? When did you first think? I mean, you joined the Territorials in 1939. When did, which is about the earliest you could have done, actually, because you're 18. During 38, did you think you'd join the Territorials as soon as you could?
Yes. I had no doubt about that.
And why exactly did you? When did? What was the exact date you joined? Do you know?
Well, exactly.
Roughly then.
About March 1939. The regiment was formed in San.
And it was a new regiment, was it?
It was.
What made you actually take the plunge then?
Well, I'd always wanted to. I'd always been interested in the OTC school. I always felt that I would have joined the Territorials anyhow, because it did.
Even without the threat of war?
Even without the threat of war, yeah. I would have preferred to have joined, at that stage, the DLI. But strange enough, there wasn't a DLI infantry battalion in Sunday. There were searchlights or something. And this is the 125th Field Regiment.
How did you hear of them? They were being formed.
They were being formed. It was general
And this was just a Royal Artillery, right? It wasn't Royal Horse Artillery or anything.
It was just Royal Field Artillery.
And how did you go about joining up?
Went down the drill.
Which one?
Now, what the devil do you call it now? I think I got this right. It wasn't the one at Seaver and all. It was the one. Do you know something?
People will if you know where about it.
It's gone, and I've forgotten the name of the garrison. They call it the garrison. It was a drill hall that's now gone.
And what road was it on? That often helps. I did.
You know, the times changed so much, I'm trying to get a mental picture of it.
It's all right. How did you go about joining in?
Two or three of us.
Were they friends from social life or from the office? Or?
No, they were social friends.
And you went to the garrison drill hall, and what happened?
Well, there was queues of people there, you know. Well, I say queues, this particular night was quite a number of people, and there was a desk. There was a chap in army uniform, I presume. Probably a regular sergeant or something. One or two other people in civilians, you just went up and gave your name, etc. They took a note. And I can't remember whether it was then or later. But you were sworn in. Something like that. It was to serve my son and lay with me or something. King George or something like that. I don't think you actually give him a shilling or anything. I can't remember.
Now, you were joining as a gunner, were you?
That's right, yeah.
There was no question of trying to join as an officer, I would presume.
No, I was too young. I was 17 and a half.
Were you allowed to join at that age? I mean,
oh, yes. I think 17 was the age for joining.
And when did they kit you out with your gear?
I think we got it a few months later.
So you weren't kitted out straight away? You don't remember too well. And any other procedure about joining? Anything else you had to do? Were you given a proper medical?
We're certainly given a medical. Whether it would be considered a proper medical by today's standards, I don't know. Yes, we were given I seem to remember. Usual.
What did you... Then that was it for that day, was it? I mean, or did you go straight
into... I don't think we got the medical that day. Maybe.
What did your mother think of you having joined up?
well, you never really know what she thought, but she acquiesced in it. She was used to me being away, of course, being away at school. And, but like, you know, although I was only 16 or 17 at that time, I was an Indian, I considered myself a young man. I was perfectly capable of making my own decisions about anything. And my mother appreciated that. So, I don't say she was enthusiastic or not. I mean, I can't remember. She certainly was.
Now, what about you? You'd have drill nights, I presume. How many a week was it?
I think it was two. It may have only been one.
And where did they take place? Was it at the garrison drill hall?
It was at the drill hall, yes.
And how were you? What did you do on drill night? If you'd take me through typical training there.
Well, originally, it just started with ordinary drill, which I was, of course, familiar with. Other people weren't straightforward life and drill and marching and all that.
Did it differ from the OTC?
Well, it did, because at that time, of course, I think the forming in threes had just come in, I think, about that time. That was the only difference. So a lot of the stuff I did originally was basic training, which I'd done in the OTC. It was very useful to me. Rather amusingly, I'm jumping ahead, perhaps I shouldn't. I was going to say that the basic training stood me in good stead, or bad stead, was when we were actually mobilised.
Oh, yes, we'll come to that later. That's fine. So you started with basic drill. What about being introduced to the gun? Because you were not a driver or anything, you were actually a gunner. Which guns were they using at the time?
They were using two. One battery of was 18-pounder, that was the field gun. No, it was the other was a 4.5 Howitzer. Both First World War guns.
And do you know the numbers of the two batteries? In mind.
Easy to find out. It's 1, 2, 3 regiment.
Which one were you put in for training? The 18-pounder one or the 4.5? We can look that up. The
numbers. Well, in actual fact. You trained on both. I mean, as far as I can remember, we probably had about two or three guns which you used to go, you know, without drag ropes, advance, all this sort of basically, which you probably have to do again in all your life. And really, it was fairly primitive stuff. We used both the 18-pounder and the 4.5. Very elementary.
What was the gun drill? Do you remember it now? What the various gun numbers did, or has that gone?
You see, a lot of it was we hardly got that far till we went to camp. I think when we went to camp, we were going to get onto more basic drill. Up till that time, we never fired the gun.
Did you practice loading and things, though, in the?
I can't remember. I don't know whether we even got that far. It was very basic.
So you were sort of doing this very basic gun drill and also basic rifle drill and foot drill. Did you actually do anything else before you went to camp? I mean, did you actually go out on at the weekend or anything, perhaps?
I can't remember that we did, no.
Let's go on to the camp then. You had a summer camp that in 39, did you?
We did. And it was in August 39, and it was somewhere near Whitby. It was near Whitby. And we were just, again, I mean, looking back, we were doing war on trains, so we were doing patient training again. We'd only been there a week when mobilisation was declared, if that's the proper term, which was actually September the 1st or August the 31st. Now, we had the guns with us because we hooked them up onto various forms of transport, terribly ancient stuff, and took them back to Sunderland. And blackout had been recorded, all sorts of humorous things. Remember, people say don't talk in case they hear you. They being. and a non-existent air charter, but well, it was all rather humorous when you come to think of it. And back into Sunderland we came.
Did you go back to the drill hall and then go home, or were you now actually called up? And
well, we were called up, but some of us were stationed in what was called the Seaburn Hall, which is down at the front. Others were stationed in the Seaburn Garrison, Seaburn Drill Hall.
So you didn't go home?
We weren't billeted. No, you had your billets there, but it was quite convenient.